longtime friend of mine and is in the attendees section.
Oh, cool.
He ran the Ashland paint store for many years. So we have a long relationship.
So it looks like the only commissioner we're missing right now is Destiny Young.
Hi, Laura.
Hey, Jennifer.
Andy, did you happen to speak with Destiny?
I emailed her and made sure that she had the link. And
okay.
She was a little bit challenged with the full time off from work to attend the meeting. She was going to try and attend from 8:30 to 9:45.
Understood.
We've got a lot to cover. Can I just get started?
It's your meeting.
Okay. I'm going to call the meeting to order. First up, are there any additions to the agenda, please? Okay. Approval of the minutes from March 19th. I only found four things that need correcting on that. Aaron, under members of the public in attendance, there's Mary Lou, but no last name. And her last name is capital L, small o, capital P, small R E S T E, Lopreste. And her name also needs to be added under item number 6, other business, under recruitment. And then under item 5, the liaison reports, in your report, Aaron, master brand just needs to be changed to master works. I know you're aware of that.
I see master works twice. Where's master brand appearing?
It's under your liaison report.
Ah, thank you.
Okay. And then under item number 7, the PAC work plan, there was the hub artwork, but under that hub artwork, it said Chair Stallman shared images of the final medallions. And I would suggest moving that to item number 8, project updates, Masterworks, plaques. The final medallions obviously don't have anything to do with the hub artwork other than being connected to the map project. And okay, that's all I saw. Did anybody else have anything that they caught? Okay.
So I move approval of the minutes as amended.
Second.
I'll second.
All in favor, say aye.
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 Opposed? All right, motion passes. All right, let's get down to business, folks. Welcome.
Hi, Destiny.
Hello.
Okay. Welcome to Say Their Names Coalition. I can give you the floor if you'd like to introduce who'd like to speak. Aaron, can you promote whoever or all of them over to panelists?
Sure. I'm promoting Jessica right now, and I'm going to ask her if she wants me to bring everyone on board. Good morning, Jessica. How are you?
Good morning, everyone. I'm good. Thank you for asking.
Would you like me to bring on your other presenters as panelists now, or do you want to bring them on throughout your presentation?
If you want to bring them on now, and then we can just kind of go seamlessly into a discussion when the presentation's finished.
Perfect. All right, so I'm bringing on Cassie, Dancing Hearts Consulting, which is Precious Edmonds, I believe, and I'm sorry, I don't know how to pronounce your name.
Tia Naida.
Thank you. Welcome, all of you.
Thank you.
Welcome. Thanks for being here. I can give you the floor.
Okay. And I'll have the ability to share my screen, right?
Yes, you do.
Okay, so let's see. Okay. All right. Well, thank you, everyone, for the opportunity to present today. My name's Jessica, and I'll be presenting on behalf of the Say Their Names Collective. Together, we're representatives from a community-driven effort to transform the Say Their Names Memorial into a permanent installation. We're together a team of committed activists, artists, as well as members of the Black-led organization Space So Black and So Equity. The current public display in Railroad Park has been able to humanize and actualize the emotions of those who might not have had another outlet, and it's inspired other people into action. A permanent installation here would provide a platform for education and a common ground for us to progress on difficult issues. And just as importantly, it will be able to send an important message about the identity of our city. There's a history of discrimination, not just in Oregon, but locally too. It's becoming more widely known that Oregon was built as a racist utopia, thanks in part to lash laws that were passed June 28th of 1844. But even after these were repealed, our very own Ashland was known widely as a sundown town where Blacks weren't welcome. And in order to reconcile and reckon with this legacy, we have a lot of work to do as a community. The Say Their Names Memorial was installed by local artists on the anniversary of the passing of those lash laws, June 28th of last year. It was in the weeks after the murder of George Floyd, as well as an increasing recognition of the assault on Black lives. The Say Their Names Memorial really serves as an acknowledgement of both our past and our present. The impact that the memorial had was acute and it was immediate. It's created conversations and learning opportunities across ages and across demographics, as you can see here. We wanted to share some of the testimonials we received that have been really representative of the general feedback we've gotten. We've heard about the influence that the Say Their Names Memorial has had on individuals and on families. We've heard people talk about how visiting the memorial has become part of their ritual. And we also received this feedback. I'm glad that someone put up this art installation and paid tribute to lives that have been needlessly taken. They went on to say, Ashland is a small town that has a lot of liberal ideas, but I don't often see a lot of action from our community. That it hasn't been destroyed or taken down is really encouraging. But less than 8 weeks after the installation went up, it was destroyed and it was taken down. And a lot of us asked what that said about our community. And you have to wonder more largely what it said to our community. But instead of being discouraged, the community came together on their own volition in the days after the memorial was vandalized and put together an even more robust and more powerful dedication to Black lives. We believe that both the destruction and the subsequent rebuild of the memorial reiterate the need for it in this community. Months later, today, and most days you go out to the park where the weather allows, Ashlanders continue to contribute to, learn from, and come together at this memorial. Together, we're a city that is grasping at opportunities to heal together. Our city of Ashland has resolved that we commit to social equity and racial justice. And not just that, but that the work mustn't be shouldered alone. In last year's resolution, our city council put this in writing, as well as the belief in the power of art to help achieve this work. It was an avowal to be a city of action and not just words. But that commitment has recently come into question. Just before Thanksgiving of last year, November 23rd, an Ashland teenager, Aiden Ellison, was murdered in the middle of our city for just being himself. We are a community that's grieving without an outlet and without any concrete recognition from our elected officials that this horrible event drives into the heart of the Black experience in this country. And we now have an opportunity and an obligation to decide if it's also going to define our city. We have a nation watching and a community wondering if this is a town like some fear with ideas, but no action. Inaction at this point threatens to undermine the commitment we made last year and more largely our identity. The haunting unanswered question of whether Black lives matter in Ashland makes it harder for us to ask people of color to live here, to work here, to to feel safe visiting here, and for Ashland to be the diverse and welcoming place that we aspire to. A powerful statement is needed. We believe that this, in the history of our community, that this is a watershed moment and that time is of the essence. The rebuilding of the memorial, the heartfelt testimonials we continue to receive, and the continued gathering are ways that our community has shown that an artistic creation that reaffirms our commitment to social equity and racial justice is something we need. Creating a permanent art installation would tell the community and the world at large that this is a place worth coming to. It would put Ashland on the map for both residents and tourists, that this is a welcoming place. In honoring the original memorial, it must be a collaborative effort that as we go forward, our elected officials have already taken on their responsibility as representatives of this community to affirm that change must be enacted. We hope that we can also have your support, the support of the Public Arts Commission, and work together in order to find an artistic solution for our community. What we have planned is a process that will keep the community engaged and involved from start to finish, from artist selection to installation, and that's begun with a community-wide call to find artists. The artists that we have worked with have brought stories and experiences both as Black Americans and as Black residents of this valley. All of their pieces bring the community in both their installation and their engagement. For each of these artists, this art has also been a part of their process of healing. So instead of having them here with us today, we're letting their art and their stories speak for themselves. I'm gonna go through and share four proposals on the screen through the presentation. And we've also shared an addendum that gives additional details about the art. And I'm hoping that after we go through each piece, that a discussion, we can engage in a discussion about them. But first I'm gonna click through and then hopefully we can all get to that point. So the first one you'll see is the winged figure, which you'll see here. Here is the mock-up of the piece titled Columns and Light. This one is the dominoes, and the last one is the Black Lives Matter mural. And we can go, you know, back through any of these photos if helpful afterwards. I do want to touch quickly on fundraising, since that's a big piece of this. The estimated cost for any of these given projects, we don't expect to exceed $100,000. We'll be relying on a combination of financial contributions, which includes community fundraising, grants, and absolutely we're hoping for city support. As far as next steps, we'd like to have a discussion here today about the willingness of the Public Arts Commission to support this project. And we would welcome constructive feedback if you have it that we can bring back to our artists. And as we approach the 1 year anniversary of the memorial and continue to add names to the fence in Railroad Park, we're hoping for a message of hope that we can bring back to our community. And that's the end of our presentation. And I'd like to, you know, open it up for members of the Public Arts Commission to ask any questions that they have and for us to use the rest of our time to have a discussion.
Would anybody like to chime in and speak to this?
I have questions.
Yeah.
So Jessica and the rest of your group, so you have these, I think there were three chosen artworks. Can you describe a little bit about the process that you used to get to these three? That'd be great. And then secondly, this might be a question for Andy or Aaron. I don't believe we as a commission choose artwork. So what would be the plan to choose the ultimate work?
Would you like me to speak to that? Or do you want her to answer the first question first?
This is Jessica. I can speak to that
Jessica.
In part. So it's four pieces that we've presented, and it was important to us to give the opportunity to Black artists to share their experience. So we use the platforms of the three Black-led organizations that are helping to kind of, you know, shepherd this project, So Black, So Equity, and BASE. And calls were made through our distribution lists, as well as on social media, and through connections with, you know, the schools and universities, in order to have a call for Black artists to make their submissions. And the second question you had was about the selection process. And it's really important for us for this to be a process that engages the community. And so our hope is that, I know you don't select, but we're hoping that we can help to hone in each of these artists' proposals so that they're all ones that would be feasible as far as city code, et cetera, goes, so that we can bring it to the community for a more involved selection process that the community would be able to engage in.
Thank you.
And Jennifer, to speak to your point, this is a different process than we often do for art acquisition. The typical model that we've engaged in is where we put out a call for artists and manage that entirely within our own. There's a different provision of the code that provides for a review process for gifts or donations. And I think that would inform this process. And that section of code is actually very general. And it says that it can happen by the council on its own motion. It can happen as a recommendation by the PAC to the council. And then it also says, or the PAC can use the selection committee, like we did for the hub sculpture, to enable that process. So it really opens all of those avenues as a pathway for this process.
Thank you, Aaron.
Same
question. I think the sculpture, if you want to call it, as it exists right now, is pretty terrific. I'm wondering, who owns that fence? Is that city property or railroad property? And has there been any pressure from any official organ of the city of Ashland to take down the existing sculpture?
So I would ask either Councillor Jensen or Michael Black to answer the question, or Michael, what might be the best person to answer the question about the ownership of the fence? If it's all right, I'm going to ask him to speak to that. Michael?
Yes. Sorry, I'm here. Okay. What was the question?
Ownership of the fence, correct.
Yeah. So the fence, the entire path and the fence is on Ashland Parks and Recreation property. On the deed, it would show City of Ashland, but Ashland Parks and Recreation has control of that property. The only question with ownership would be, does the railroad have any interest in that fence as far as, you know, is it half their fence and half our fence type of deal? But we own all of the property on the south side of the fence and the south face of the fence, I guess you could say.
So to follow up on my question, I really like the sculpture, as I'm calling it a sculpture because it kind of is one. The way it exists now, has there been any thought to just continuing that or making it more permanent or just making it a sculpture that constantly gets added to or changed or can be a sort of community-based, dynamic, living sculpture, if you will?
And who's that question for?
Anybody. I guess the Say Your Names people, if they'd considered that.
If it's okay, I can touch on that one. So there actually is kind of a backstory. We met last October with Michael and Aaron in the park, as well as Dave Lohman and some other folks, to discuss a permanent, at that time we were discussing the need to figure out what was going to happen with the fence because winter was coming and weather was coming and there was concern because it isn't owned by anyone and it wasn't permitted when it went up. It was an organic installation that went up without permission. And so it kind of left it in a gray area. And at that time, we actually discussed this proposal of creating a permanent piece that would go up. And it sort of halted because of incidents that happened within the community, like Jessica referred to in her presentation, Aiden Ellison's murder for one thing. But this really clearly needed to be a Black-led decision about what was going to go up. And there were other things that were more urgently pressing for the Black community organizations, as far as I, you know, from my understanding that were happening, like the police forum was being held at that time. And then Aiden Ellison was killed. And so it sort of went on pause. And then after I came to you all and said, in January, something is coming, we're percolating on something. I was again informed that it needed to come down swiftly, the current installation. And so that sort of sped us very quickly into this process of coming to this, you know, collective group. We very quickly fired our ignitions at full speed and have been working on a permanent proposal for you all. And at no time did it ever sound like that was an option. From my understanding, it felt like it needed to come down and we didn't want that to come down until a permanent installation was going up for all the reasons you can imagine of how that would impact the community. So
who's telling you to take it down?
We were told that it needed to come down. Steve contacted me after the last commission meeting and said that it needed to come down and that he thought it should come down ceremoniously by the community. And we discussed that, and I realized that it did not feel right at all to take it down. And so that sparked us very rapidly into this conversation and this collective.
And I would also like to add, thank you for that, Cassie. Yeah,
thank you, Precious.
I think also with the idea of a permanent art installation in terms of supporting and honoring Black people, living here in Southern Oregon, I think the memorial is great. But I think we want to see something that not only honors those whose laws were needlessly taken, but also demonstrate the living aspect of Black people here, and that we're present and that we're living. And so not just honoring us in death, but in life as well.
Yeah. Were you raising your hand to speak?
Are you talking to me?
That was me celebrating what was just said and putting an exclamation point on it. Thank you, Precious.
So I just wanted to say two things, just to go back to, I think, your presentation in January. I just wanted to be clear that the Public Arts Commission has never talked about this formally, nor would we have said that. So whatever directive you received wasn't from us. Secondly, that is interesting, Stanley, that you asked that question, because my other question was there an intention to keep the fence and have this permanent structure together? And I do realize that how much work it takes to keep that fence looking great. And so maybe this was an intention now of a ceremonious removal of the fence once a permanent structure. And I was just wondering if you had had a dialogue, if that was your intention, that this would replace it.
I'd like to speak to that. It is a lot of work to maintain it. And the beautiful thing that we have really been celebrating is that the community has been not just maintaining it, but consistently beautifying it. And that's part of what we see as the beauty of making this a community process, right? Really engaging the Black community first and foremost, and then engaging the entire community to support. That's something we also see with the permanent installation would support with maintenance, is to make sure that this process honors community and allows for the time for community to be engaged, even thinking of doing temporary art installation like chalk art and visioning sessions with community. If any of you have heard of the group City Repair Project up in Portland, they do a lot of beautiful work, community engagement, placemaking. So it really just deepens the sense of home and connection between community members. So that's really what we're looking at for this process. And I don't think we haven't made any definitive decision. As we said, we've been told that it should come down, and we've had the sense that there's that pressure. So then there's been, you know, how do we bring permanence to this? And I don't imagine that there would be pushback on keeping what's already been created, as well as honoring Black lives, celebrating Black lives, and bringing something that's a bit more, just what Precious said, right? Really, really speaking to Black life and celebrating and informing and uplifting the Black community that is present, so that it's not only looking at the death that has happened, but about the beauty that is here and that we intend to support and lift up. Yeah.
Thank you. Steve, you had a question?
Can I add something before we move on? Sure. Into that, I think it is beautiful that the community is constantly updating and beautifying and working on it. But I do think it's part of the wanting a permanent installation is the idea of like it existing long past this moment, right? Like there's a lot of, we know just from movement behavior in the past that it ebbs and flows. Like there's like a wide awakening and then that kind of dwindles, and we want something to live here and be present long past the feeling and the emotion that is existing in this moment in time.
And one more thing, the creation process, and particularly engaging the Black community in the creation process, that's a healing process, that's a joy creation process, right? And then Like with the statement, as Jessica mentioned in the presentation from the city about where the dedication and the devotion is, seeing that the city is really choosing to stand for this in that long-term sense is really potent, healing, and also, as Jessica said, valuable for tourism, for the economics of our town, and the health of our community.
Steve?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'd like to clarify a couple things. Way early on in the conversation with Ms. Priscanis, there was no demand or direction to take it down from me by any stretch. It was a strong suggestion because in a conversation with Michael Black and Public Works, Dave Lohman, and so on, it became clear that the long-term maintenance of this wonderful community project on that fence at that location was problematic, very much in the light for the folks that just spoke, as far as the long-term viability relative to vandalism, to weather, to wear and tear, and to eventual occasional community inattention, it would become tattered and so on. So my suggestion, strong suggestion, that to take it down ceremoniously, and this was during February Black History Month, would be to open up the path forward for a more permanent installation and not have that be problematic to Public Works, problematic to parks, problematic to the railroad, and to pull all those people together for a piece of artwork permanently on that fence. There were all kinds of operational problems. So that was the reason for this strong suggestion that it be taken down to move it forward. Looks like we're moving forward. It was a path that was a little rugged there for a while, but I think the path is clear now, and I'm glad that we are moving forward. But and the city would certainly support this relative to the resolution, and there is a process for public art, and I look forward to helping that happen. Thank you.
Jim.
My name's Jim Lewis. I'm a Parks Commissioner, and I'm also the liaison from the Commission to the Public Arts Commission. And I live about half a block from Railroad Park. And I agree with Stanley. This spontaneous community effort is powerful, as a powerful statement. And I would hope whatever we have continues that powerful statement, that spontaneous thing sometimes is is more exciting than something that's planned for years and takes a while to get. So I don't know. I'm not sure how we continue that statement that the community as a whole made and a commitment to this movement. So if I can go back in history, about 10 or so years ago, there was a peace wall that was on a fence that was entirely on Southern Pacific property. And luckily, somebody had the foresight to take a picture of each cell from that peace wall statement, which was also spontaneous. And it was vandalized, completely removed. And so we had a history, and we contained the images, and they were made into tiles, and they're on the front of the library right now. So maybe it wasn't as spontaneous, but it at least carries that the powerful statement of peace and equality. I'm not sure how we do that, but I'm kind of excited about where we go from here, because things in our community can transform. And we have a great group with the Parks Commission and also the Public Art Commission and getting the council on board. And so I'm kind of excited to be a small part of this.
I'd like to say a couple things. So Jim, at our Wednesday meeting, you referenced that APRC has a signs, plaques, and memorials policy in place, and that any memorial that were placed in a city park would have to be negotiated and worked within that framework. Jim or Michael, can you speak to that and provide some helpful information for the coalition?
Go ahead, Michael.
Okay. So that is correct. There is a signs, memorials, and plaques subcommittee. This would be considered a non-standard memorial. We have standard memorials like benches and tables and things like that. This is a non-standard, kind of like the Japanese Garden is technically a memorial. The donation for the Japanese Garden was a memorial. So it does need to go through the signs plaques committee, but it starts with this kind of process. It starts with me. And we talk about it generally. It can start with the Arts Commission, but eventually it needs to go through that committee as well.
Yes, what I see needing to happen with this process, and if I use the Japanese lantern that's by the tennis courts in Lithia Park as an example, that proposal came to us from the donor, and he brought with him the fabricator and the artist who designed it. And they made a full presentation to us about that piece and about where their first choice location in Lithia Park for it. And APRC was looking to PAC to approve that with the specific location then to be determined. So we then met in Lithia Park and talked about that. So what I see needing to happen is kind of that similar process. However, we've got three very important entities working towards this project. We've got, say, their names, Coalition, PAC, and we've got APRC. And there needs to be a lot of dialogue between those. It's not so much as, okay, tell you what, say their names, does their work, and then they pass it off to PAC. PAC does their work, and then we look to APRC for their approval. It's not that cut and dried. We've got to work together and talk about some possibilities to move this forward. So it's kind of an unprecedented project, I feel. Aaron, you made mention that it does fall under the donations category.
So the section of the code is review process for gifts or donations. And I think it's the only section that would inform this if we aren't actively trying to acquire it on our own.
Right. Okay. The other thing is that as far as APRC is concerned, I found out Wednesday night that they have their own specific lighting policy for the parks. It fits neatly within the community development ordinance. So there isn't anything radically different in that that I see, but that is a step that also needs to be taken into consideration. And specifically with proposal two, with the beacon of light on top that would be turned on for a month, you know, that needs to be evaluated within what APRC would allow. So that's another thing. And I will say that what the Public Art Commission's job is to do is to evaluate a proposal that comes to us, hopefully complete. In a case like this, as Jennifer said, we're not really part of the selection process. Initially, when we did the hub artwork project that we're in the middle of, you know, we weeded down proposals down to a handful of ones that fit the criteria. And then we moved that on to a selection panel and they made the final choice and then it moves forward. So in a case like this, you bring to us four proposals, but it's not really part of our process to evaluate all four of those and pick the one. What would be most helpful is for the Say Their Names Coalition to work internally and come to grips with the fact of which proposal you want, and then flesh that out completely. Artist bio, references, public art experience. There's a whole lot of stuff that we can help you with. And we can give you examples of some of the submissions that we received for other projects as kind of a template to kind of help you see. I see the great need for some education in how this process. Public art is really kind of a unique animal to its own. And there's a lot of criteria that it has to fit within. And I think the Public Art Commission is totally committed to helping you guys along this path. But I would reiterate, it does need to fit within the ordinances that we operate under. And mostly, you can look it up. It's posted on our landing page. It's Ashland Municipal Code 2.29. And there's a bunch of things under that that I think some of you have seen. Jessica, your helpful PDF with the criteria listed and how each project may relate to that specific criteria. That's a great start, and you're to be commended for doing that work. I do feel it's a start, and we would like to help you develop that into a final proposal. And then what I would strongly suggest is that you work through the process, come down to the proposal that you want to see have happen, and then have that artist meet with the Public Art Commission, APRC, and city staff, and we work through that and help that artist develop a plan that spells out the specifics. One of the things that happens once a public art installation is approved by, well, let me backtrack a little bit. So the process would be you come to us and we approve or deny a proposal, and it moves on to APRC since it's, if it's going to be located in a park. And then the next step, it would go on to city council for them to approve the funding or just the overall placement of it. Once that is done, the artwork then is brought into the city's public art collection and becomes property of the city, and the city is with maintaining that. So, for example, if we were talking about maintaining a t-shirt display on the fence, and you talk about, oh, well, we would want the community to participate and update it frequently. I think there needs to be a little bit more of a handshake agreement on how that's going to happen. Those sort of specifics need to be worked out. You know, the people that are maintaining it now are doing an excellent job. It looks more vibrant and more powerful than I've ever seen it. I ride past it at least 3 or 4 times a week, and I've been impressed with the way it's evolving. And, you know, it's a powerful statement. Absolutely. And we want to help you turn that into something permanent and educate toward the proper process. Does that make sense?
I'll just jump in and say, I think, you know, one of our primary goals today was to start this discussion and to try to garner your support for this. And I think in that regard, thank you, because I think we're glad you see the importance of this project, and we're very grateful for your support and also your offer to kind of assist in educating us on how this works. You know, we're not experts in this. We're trying to represent what we think is an important need for the community and something the community wants. And we're very open to getting educated on how to kind of move this process forward. So I think, you know, your offer to give us examples of how other proposals have come through, we definitely take. I think the other piece that I'm wondering aloud, and it's not for you to decide necessarily, but in our want for the community to be involved, part of that was proposing giving them the opportunity to vote on in an engaged voting process on the proposal that the community might decide upon. And so I think one of our goals in coming to you before we had decided internally was kind of to make sure that if we were to propose these 4 to the community and ask them for them to make a decision and then go through that kind of honing in process, if making sure that these are all feasible, for example, like something like the light on the, you know, kind of making sure if we propose this to the community and they choose one, is it feasible? And hopefully whatever they chose with enough wiggle room, and all the artists are very open to more iterations, that would be possible. But would that be okay to come back with, do a community process and then come back to you? Or do you foresee that as problematic at all? I see Sandy has a question.
So first of all, thank you for your clarity in presenting everything that you've pulled together. But what you're describing now, I shouldn't say what, and what you're describing now really is the process that works so well for the Public Arts Commission, kind of in reverse. So my suggestion would be for all the artists who want to put their project out there for the city to review, go through the process, meet with the chair of the commission, meet with staff, and work through the process so that we're clear that each project is really viable, and then put it out perhaps in the selection panel process that we generally use, where community citizens sit on a panel, talk about what the parameters are for the project, and at that point make a decision. That's worked really so well for the Public Arts Commission in the past, and I'm betting that it could work well for how you want your project to be determined to work through the process.
I need to just mention that initially you guys asked about how much time you had, and given the amount of conversation that still needs to happen, I suggested 30 minutes. We're already at almost 45. I can go until 9:30, and extend that to almost an hour, but we will need to move on after that point.
Jennifer. I was just going to add a little to Sandy. Sandy said that great. And just, I think it's really important that in the four you have presented, it's all, public art is a beast that we, that most artists shy away from, because it, the fabrication, the ways in which it's, you have to watch out for how it might hurt someone. How is it put in the ground? Do I need to have electricity plumbed? Do I need, you know, there's all of these really little details that have to go into the plan and have to be, you know, you have to work with public works, you have to work with the parks, you have to work with a fabricator. And so typically when we have this process, we are most often dealing with people who do this all the time, the artists. Their packets are amazing. And yes, they have specific fabricators. They know how to plumb or know who to talk to. So what's really important, and I just wanted to reiterate it based on Sandy's thought, is that each of these artists and you should feel like every answer is, every question has been answered in cahoots with the different departments within the city, so that you feel like if the community chose this work, it's going to happen and it's going to be right. And so only put forward things to a panel or to a whole city that you know will be successful and that you know everyone has signed off on. That is so important. And so when we get these packets from artists, we look at them and we know when we put them into a panel's hands that we're confident that all of them can be great and that now they just need to choose. So that's, I think, the most important aspect, is to really do due diligence with research, with dialogue, with all aspects of fabrication, community, vandalism, and so forth.
I see Michael Black has had his hand up for a while. Michael, would you like to speak?
Yeah, so just before the conversation's over, I just want to say that those comments were excellent, and I would echo those comments that you know, we want to go through and look at location, size, massing, electricity, all, you know, pedestrian traffic, all of those types of things. Then also, you know, is the group aware that another art installation was just approved for Railroad Park? I just want to make sure that was clear. And then I want to ask you if it would be possible for the group to come and give the same presentation and have this conversation with the Parks Commission potentially on May 5th. But we would get back to you to try and schedule that. I think that would be a good due diligence step and get the conversation rolling with the Parks Commissioners as well. And Jim, does that sound okay to you?
Yeah, it sounds excellent. I would hope we could make that happen.
Would you like to include a PAC commissioner or chair in that discussion?
Yes, that would be, I mean, I think it'd be great, Jim. I'm sure it could only lend to the conversation being more positive and productive. Sorry.
Sandy, you had your hand up for a sec.
Yeah, I did. And Michael said all the things that I was going to say. My final question would be, have you considered other locations than Railroad Park? Jessica, could you answer that?
Yeah. I think because the park is where... you know, this installation was born, and where, you know, it has so much, it's already accumulated so much meaning for the community. That would be our first priority. That said, I think the ultimate goal of having something that is permanent and also has visibility, we could be open to having it in another location where it had, you know, at least a comparable amount of traffic and visibility, but Railroad Park is absolutely our first choice. And I don't know if anyone else from the group wants to, yeah.
Yeah, I just want to tag on to that, that we had discussed that. And we also had discussed the possibility, the potential for Railroad Park, you know, knowing that the history of the railroad and the Chinese citizens is also Chinese American citizens is very important. That history is important. And that park could also become a form of hub for those, that type of work and those type of public art, but also community art and education and engagement. And so that was something that piqued our interest and sounded exciting, you know, to make the Railroad Park a sort of destination type of park.
Tia, have you had the opportunity to see the public art piece that's being installed? That's okay.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I'd like to make a statement on the reason we have citizen commissions in town is because instead of a nameless, faceless bureaucracy, it has policy and nothing can change. Well, exceptions can happen in commissions. We can look at it and evaluate it and see that it's important to the community. So if you look at the history of murals, we have a highly restrictive mural policy in Ashland. And I think some of the murals in town are powerful statements in their own way. They bring color and light and impact. And so this is an exception to our mural policy. So I see that there's always wiggle room and there's always, as long as it's defined properly and debated well, and everybody's on board, I think there's all kinds of things we can do. And so And once again, I'm excited about how this is gonna move forward.
Yes, Andy.
And I would tack on to your mural statement. You know, if we look at the resolution that the city created all those months ago, they indicated that they would be interested in a mural, in the possibility of a mural, which in many ways is much more active or provides the opportunity for more activity than a stationary sculpture might. So I would encourage you to continue to consider the mural that has been presented by one of the artists.
Yeah, and to add to that, one of the things that's very important that I spoke to earlier was that the city is in charge of maintaining this artwork. If a mural is on a bike path or a street, for example, there's some crosswalks around town, one right by Bridge Street and one on Faith that are painted. And with all the car traffic over them, you know, they do look worn. And if the coalition opts for a mural on a bike path or a street, something of that nature, it's really important that it look good through the years. You know, I don't think anybody would feel particularly proud about having artwork that just looks beat upon. So that process of maintaining the artwork it would be a big part of your proposal.
I was noticing, and correct me if I'm wrong, it appears that three of the proposed sculptures in your presentation appear to be occupying exactly the spot where the existing hub sculpture is going to go. So I'm wondering if you've thought about someplace else within Railroad Park that would be appropriate.
I think we'll be discussing all of that and the artists are becoming aware of that. Yeah, we definitely have a process ahead of us. I feel really grateful that you all are so receptive to engaging in this dialogue and in supporting us coming to a really solid outcome, and also supporting us in the process of engaging community so that this whole process. We really see it as not just about the end product, but about the whole process and who and how we engage and how we and how we as white citizens lift up and are in support of and providing resources to Black community to really bring forth what their vision is, what really wants to be there, and not just, you know, become attached to what has been created, which was initiated by white community members, but to really take it as an opportunity where, okay, now we've made this big statement that we're here. We want to raise awareness. We want to take action. So the next action is, what does our Black community want? What serves, what uplifts, what enlivens? And that's the curiosity. And that's a key part of the process that we can discover along the way. And I just have one question logistically that I think would be really valuable is, how do we communicate with you all in between these meetings? What's the best avenue? Should we create a trail, a paper trail for this process where that includes everyone? Do we communicate individually? What do you prefer?
Well, we're bound by public meeting laws, Tia. So Aaron, you can speak to that a little more.
Yeah, so I'm not an attorney, but my understanding is that it's problematic to send an email to all of the commissioners, because if one of them were to reply all, that technically is forming an electronic quorum. So I'm more than happy to be a exchange vehicle between the commissioners and you all, because when you're emailing me, that same problem doesn't exist. So that's one way. And of course, Jennifer, I saw in the chat that you were offering to help. There's no problem at all if you're having one-on-one conversations with an individual commissioner. The problem becomes when many people are getting CC'd in. And so that's the thing that needs to be respected.
What I do when I need to communicate with the commission as a whole is I email Aaron, and then I blind copy everybody. So nobody can just by default, it can never go to a group discussion. And that process was suggested to me about 2 years ago by the former staff liaison. And that has been a really valuable way to communicate with people. They can respond to that, but it only comes back to me or to Aaron. It takes a little bit of getting used to, for sure. And I initially I felt so frustrated. It's like, gosh, we only meet 12 times a year. You know, how can we do our work without communicating with each other on a regular basis? And obviously, there's lots of great communication that needs to happen for this project. So, yeah, that will have to be established. And Aaron is definitely your point guy on that. Thank you, Aaron. We're just about, I really need to save an hour for the conversation with the artist who's working on the hub sculpture. In summing up, would any of the coalition like to bring anything up, or does PAC have anything else to add to this discussion?
Precious, I saw you unmuted a few minutes ago, and I was wondering if you had anything you wanted to say.
I was going to speak about like the location. But I think that was addressed. Honestly, I feel like the artist didn't know at the time where exactly the hub art piece was going to be, and so we weren't able to inform them. So obviously, adjustments would need to be made in that regard. And yeah, I mean, I'm just grateful. I learned a lot in terms of like, obviously how this process works. I think it definitely, this conversation was needed and will definitely help inform how we move forward, and grateful for the opportunity to move forward. So I'm excited.
Well, thank you very much for taking the time to come and present to us. It means a lot, and your project is very important and valuable, and you know, you're to be commended for tackling this project, and I'm sure PAC will strive to help you down this complicated road. I'm what Jennifer said about public art is a beast. Velocity is the sculpture that's in the alleyway next to Starbucks downtown, and when the artist came When we had the ceremony to formally bring it into the public art collection, Gordon spoke, and the first thing out of his mouth, I'll never forget, he said, "Hey, gang, public art is not for wimps. I have come down here, and I've done the song and dance for you guys like 3 or 4 times. You know, this is not, as Jennifer said, it is a beast. It's a very peculiar entity to its own. And so, you know, we're committed to helping you along that process and just do some weightlifting and prepare. there's a lot to learn in this process, and we'll help you where we can."
And I just want to add, if you looked at the chat, it says my name, Jennifer, but that's not me. Jennifer and Dave are actually the artists for the Hub sculpture, and they're the next people on the agenda. And yep. They have an amazing track record, and they are saying to you all that they would love to answer any questions you have. So if you have time to even listen in on what we're going to do next, it's really going to be fascinating, and we're happy to share, and they're happy to share with you. I just wanted to make sure you understood the chat.
Jennifer, thank you for clarifying that, because I thought it was you, and I'll get her permission if I can share their contact information, and I'll forward that to you, Jessica.
And one of the things that I asked Jennifer Corio was, their packet is part of, it's public information. It's part of the packet that was in the APRC packet from Wednesday night. And if you click on the agenda for that meeting, you can get that PDF, and you can see, we were so impressed with Jennifer's initial submission about her resume and the projects that they've done. It was literally the gold standard that we looked at. We so appreciated her thoroughness. It was very, very professional. And then when she came with the final proposal that is part of that packet, that's another thing. It is slick, and all the details are worked out, and it's a great, you should definitely become familiar with it, and you could even perhaps think of it as a template, what PAC might need to see. They've been through this process for many, many years, and they are absolute pros.
Thank you for that, and thank you to Jennifer and Dave, and we're looking forward to sticking around for your the next presentation.
One more quick thing. If the Say Your Names Coalition has not seen the public art piece that the Arts Commission has put together, it's about a 20-minute slideshow. I'm not sure if that's been posted publicly yet. No? Well, look forward to it. We put together a piece about public art that we're going to be used to help educate the public. And it's wonderful. And it sort of explores the power and the worth of public art. So, when it is made public, look for it. It's good.
All right. Thank you so much for taking the time to come and present to us today. It means a lot.
Okay. So I'm going to go ahead and put you guys back into the attendee mood. Thank you again.
Thank you.
Let's bring Jennifer and Dave in.
Yeah, I have to do these each one at a time. So just give me one moment, please. And then here comes Jennifer.
Jennifer, I apologize. We ran a little bit over time. I'm hoping you can still deal with the time constraints.
Hello.
There we go. Perfect.
Good morning.
Hey, guys.
Hi, everybody. I'm Jennifer, and this is Dave. I sat in, I heard all of the last conversation, and very impressed with what the Say Their Names group presented today. And I will say that as I talk about the hub sculpture today, that the Say Their Names display on the fence certainly changed my lens at how I looked at this project in the design phase. And I do want to just reiterate what I put in the chat box. Dave and I would absolutely be open to talking, sharing our experiences. We've had many pitfalls along the way on our journey. You know, we still look at ourselves as definitely professional artists, but still emerging, and we're learning a lot, and every commission is different. So we're very happy to help them or answer questions. So thank you. So I figured today, if you want me to start, that how I would use the hour is, since this is the first time of us presenting to you all, give an overall view of the design and kind of talk about some of the thinking behind it. And then as the conversation goes, get a little granular to talk about the more detailed stuff that came up in the panels, in their comments about the artwork. So we're showing a refined design today compared to the original one that we submitted. That sound good?
Yep.
And I will first start by saying thank you very much for choosing this piece. We are absolutely honored, and it's quickly becoming one of the most meaningful projects we've worked on. And I think that will come clear as I talk about the project and the process. So I'm going to share my screen.
We are so glad we connected. Absolutely.
Okay. So today we're going to talk about the sculpture design Golden Connections. That's a name change from the original, and I will get into the meaning behind the name a little bit later. Okay, so how does this? Okay, here we go. So Golden Connections, the original call was for a railroad-centric piece. And as I dug a little deeper and talked to members of your commission, it's like, we don't want anything, you know, literal, and we want it to really talk about the history, the huge transformation that the railroad brought to Ashland. I took a visit down to Ashland at the end of January so I could see the site, and I spent several days there. I love Ashland. Spent a lot of time at Railroad Park and was really taken by the landscape, the mountains, but also the Say Their Names artwork behind it. I spent a lot of time you know, going through and looking at each piece, and you know, that then planted the seed in my head you know, about social justice, social equity. And so as I was researching the history of the railroad and learning more and more about the Chinese and their experience of coming here and working and how they were treated and not recognized, I'm like, wow, here we are still repeating ourselves in many ways. So you'll see how that ended up making its way into the sculpture. So some of the things I thought about were obviously preserving the view and not blocking it, of the view of not the mountains as well as the artwork. We didn't know the fate of the artwork, but it's there now. So still to have some view into, you know, other artwork there in the park. As an artist, we're always thinking about the budget, how much budget we have, and then the space, and how to get the appropriate scale for the budget. So in this case, you know, we felt like it needed to be upwards of about 10 to 12 feet high, but to do it within budget. So at first I was like, how are we gonna do this? And then this idea came to use this circular frame. So the circle here, you know, it's a pretty simple design using the circle, the curved railroad, and then the spike. So the circle becomes the frame, and the circle is meaningful in a lot of ways. It emulates the circular shape of the turntable, the train turntable that was right behind there when this was in full operation, as well as the roundhouse. I like how it also represents the circumference of the United States, of which Ashland is so important because it was that final connection for the railroad to be able to navigate completely around the United States. So a big national event. It also emulates the spoke medallions that are going to be absolutely beautiful in themselves as works of art. The circle is made up of channel iron, so it has a very industrial nature to it, much like a train yard or a maintenance yard for a train. And it will be weathering steel or Corten steel, so it naturally rusts to a point, and then it stops, and it basically coats itself, so further rusting. It still happens, but much more slowly. So it's a very long-lasting material. And the way it rusts becomes very rich and beautiful. And then you have this winding track up above. I had fun designing, kind of this helix shape. And as I show it in the round, you'll see how that it's very dynamic and it changes texture and visually as you walk around it. And I have the tracks, or the ties, the tracks made out of stainless steel. I've always loved the juxtaposition of a shiny stainless steel with the more earthy rust. And I chose stainless steel kind of to represent the newness at the time, so reflecting back to the history. And then you have, and so that's signifying that topsy-turvy journey over the Siskiyou Mountains that the train would have taken. And then you have the large spike going through. So many spikes to build this railroad. So many spikes driven in by the railroad workers. And it's the gold color to reflect, obviously, the golden spike and the golden spike ceremony that happened there. But also, it was kind of this time of transformation for Ashland, where it was. Population was growing. Commerce was growing. Culture was growing. The whole railroad district neighborhood growing and thriving. And so then it was cool to be able to use the spike to create some wording on it in order to create a little bit more picture of the story and the history. And we will talk about that. What's that?
Yeah, you're good there.
This is just another view further away as if you're walking into the park. So the spike becomes a canvas for two phrases. The first is just a very simple visual that highlights Ashland as this very important connection point between its two larger sister cities, Portland and San Francisco. We include the date of the Golden Spike ceremony that happened, of which is very telling. When you look at pictures, there's not one Chinese person in that during that Golden Spike ceremony. By then, I've learned a lot of them were already on ships back to China, or those who were staying here in the United States were off looking for other work, other places. And so the second side, yeah, you can see that. Okay, so the second side, and we're going to go into much more detail of what is on this spike, but it celebrates the great contributions of the Chinese railroad workers. We're going to use a combination of English words and Chinese characters. These words will be laser cut into the spike, and then there'll be an acrylic panel behind them. And then inside the spike will be lighted so that the words have a soft glow at night. We're not talking any direct light, but a very beautiful soft glow, which adds another dimension. So what this design really does is it both celebrates the transformation that the railroad brought to Ashland and the Chinese experience, honoring the Chinese men who built it. And I like how we can talk about two topics without one taking away from the other. So right now I'm just going to go through kind of for you to see as you're walking around the piece. It gives you a little bit more of the dimensionality. Here's trying to simulate what it might look like at night. Okay, so the title Golden Connections, I originally came with the idea of golden opportunity, but that was when I offered several different phrases that we could put on the spike. And at first I was actually thinking that to really paint the picture that maybe there was a little storytelling vignette on each side. And so it would paint a larger picture about you know, still that front-facing piece that had Ashland, San Francisco, and Portland, but others about the activity that the train drew anytime a train would come through with kids coming down, people coming down to try to sell and make money, selling fruit or lithia water. There was also one about more about the railroad itself and how complicated it was to build the tracks over the Siskiyou Mountains. But once I put the wording on all four sides, it just looked too cluttered. So that's when I basically asked the panel to pick, and the panel chose the honoring of the Chinese. So I really think that in light of what's been happening in the park, you know, that did influence of like, how do we also talk about the social justice aspects of this piece as well. And so it made me really think the sculpture took on a whole completely new meaning and things to consider and think about. So golden opportunity did not make sense because it was not always a golden opportunity for the Chinese railroad workers. So we came up with golden connections, and I love this. I mean, the railroad itself is a connector. It connected places, and in doing that, it connected people to new places and then people to people in faraway places. The sculpture connects the past to the present and hopefully the future, but this is another idea that goes beyond my my original proposal. But basically, it talks about the past and the building of the railroad and what happened, and then in the present moment, we are offering a very belated honoring and sense of gratitude to the Chinese railroad workers. And then on a very personal level, the project has connected me to many people in the Chinese American community. This was very daunting at first. I didn't know, you know, when I knew that I needed to create a very respectful message, and I didn't have a lot of space to create this message, how do I do this when I'm uneducated in a lot of the history and the nuances and things like that? So Andy gave me my first person to talk to, Chelsea Rose, archaeologist over at Southern Oregon University. She would then suggest somebody else, and that would, you know, one connection would lead to another connection. And I have had 3 weeks of an odyssey, really, just talking to these people and learning. I've talked to Chinese artists, Chinese scholars, calligraphers, researchers, community advocates, archaeologists, anthropologists. It's really been deeply connecting. And then finally, on the connections front, the project has the potential, even more so than what we have now, to connect to social justice endeavors that are focusing on other marginalized groups facing discrimination, such as the Black Lives Matter, you know, maybe something Native American wise at some point, but it connects all these social justice endeavors. So going into the wording, the south side, as you walk into the park, this is really what we originally proposed. It's a really simple graphic that shows Ashland, you know, in the middle, but larger because of the importance that Ashland became as a stopping place and as a maintenance yard for Southern Pacific, but mostly as a stopping place for people to get out, stretch their legs, go have lunch, and they got to start seeing Ashland. And I wouldn't be surprised if then they thought, oh, this is a quaint little town. And then maybe one time they were going from, they decided, well, let's just go to Ashland to visit. And so it really put Ashland on the map. So really super simple visual for that. Now this is getting into a little granularity from something that the panel, selection panel, they wanted me to look at the font. So we chose Southern Pacific Railroad font. I thought it was a super fun font, relevant because it's very railroad looking. It was developed by a train buff. But somebody mentioned that they thought it looked a lot like the city of Ashland logo. And they asked me to consider either a different font or some other aspect. But this is where I'd like to play devil's advocate. You know, I look at the city of Ashland and that A is definitely different than the A up there. I see the similarities, but I just wonder if, is this really an issue? Even if somebody were to say, oh, that looks like the city of Ashland logo. Is that okay? And if not, if you want me to look at other fonts, I will do that. The one in the middle, the picture is the Vienna font that they're using on the spoke medallions. That's where it says Ashland Train Station and Roundhouse. I can try this. But it did cost $42 to buy it, and I didn't just want to buy it if I wasn't going to end up using it. So I don't know if we want to stop and talk about this now or wait until the end of the presentation.
Jennifer, I would say continue with the presentation, okay. and then we'll work with the time that we have left.
Okay, great.
I realize it's entirely possible we won't get through everything, and this is just scratching the surface.
Okay, so the real meat of the project has been, or of my research, has been focusing on the north side, honoring the Chinese and getting the message right. And that means here you have me, you know, as a Caucasian trying, you know, we should be the ones trying to put forth the honoring and the gratitude, but I needed to do it respectfully, authentically, and meaningfully, and again, very succinctly. So I went on my odyssey of talking to a lot of people, getting contributions from others, and this is probably not a full list of people that I have talked to. And I've learned so much. I've watched documentaries. People would point to things, and it's been a project within itself. I want to point out Maywin Richards. I think she might be in the audience today, but she's a Ashland resident, has been for years, and she has provided me with, really, I consider her a collaborator at this point. She's given me so many insights and ideas. She has helped me think about the language, the character use, how to say things maybe more poetically. So I really appreciate her. And then she's connected me with Teacher Yang, GU, if I say his name correctly, Yang. He is a Chinese scholar of the arts. He's a calligrapher, an artist, a musician, a teacher. He's actually here in Portland, but he does have ties with Ashland because he, I believe it was a couple years ago, had an art show. I think it was Soka that brought him down and had an art show with some of his calligraphy and his paintings and things like that. And so he has also been helping with the language. My hope is that we can collaborate with him to draw the letters that we end up billing with, the Chinese characters. And then Dave and I can then transfer those, like trace them and then digitize them in order to get his artwork into the spike. Let's see here. So in the messaging, there's English and there are the Chinese characters. So what we want to do is express gratitude for their significant contributions. So it's recognizing the contributions, the significant contributions they made to the building of the railroad, expressing our gratitude, but also with an understand, like, that we understood the sacrifices they made to leave their country, to leave their family, to come over here, to look for better work so they could send money back to their family and their villages. It was a big honor for the Chinese families when somebody did travel to the United States to work on the railroads. And then at first I was thinking, you know, thank you, and I'm sorry, and apology, but I heard loud and clear through the research that, you know, just watch the I'm sorry. Words can be meaningless sometimes, and that might come across as shallow or just not as meaningful. So that's what I've been working with everybody, but really Mei Wynn and Professor Young on how do we say this the most respectfully, and what we have come up with. And I will still say this is a work in progress. It continues to get better and better, but not only do I want to get the right words, the right characters, but then as an artist, I also want it to look good spatially and visually on the spike. So I'm hoping that we can still move forward. You can go to city council next week with what we have. And, you know, there's time. As we know, the public art process is long. There's a lot of things to do. And so this can still be happening. We can still be improving on this to make sure. But as long as the council knows that we're working with a lot of people who have a lot of knowledge and great input into this, that we'll come up with the best message for the park. It says, in honor of the Chinese men who laid these tracks despite discrimination and without recognition. So there's the honoring, there's showing their contribution of, you know, basically doing a lion's share of the work, but also facing up to our actions towards them with the discrimination without giving them recognition. So it's, again, people who are reading this, It in a short way, it's educational on what our past actions have been, what our past history is. And then the next, today we offer our belated gratitude and sadness, is basically a translation of those seven Chinese characters. And that's one thing that the selection panel, they did want a translation of what we were saying in English. And so there we have it. And that is something that Professor Young and Mei Wynn came up with. And it's just a few words, but today, every word is important. Today, meaning sort of the today and the belated, is showing that we understand that we are very late in this honoring. And then that kind of is the heavy heart, the regret. So there's not a I'm sorry, but there is the sense of remorse that we have from our past behaviors. So I like it because it's a little more poetic way to say it, a little more literary. And that's very important to the Chinese too. Poetry is one of the main art forms there. So that's kind of all the consideration that went into this. I didn't talk about the traditional versus the simplified. That was really interesting and a big piece of the research is which characters do we use? And these are traditional characters. That's what we're going to go with. If I could oversimplify what I've learned is half the people voted traditional. You should definitely use traditional. This is what these, what this was the language, the written language that was in place when these men came over here. But the other half, their argument was simplified because that's what people are learning now. And if you want people to look at this art, you want the most people who know the Chinese language or are potentially learning the Chinese language. And as I understand in Ashland, there's a Confucius Institute. And so there maybe are some immersion programs where there's kids who are learning the characters and they're all learning simplified. So they thought that the more people who could read this, the better, because it's an educational piece. But as I dug deeper, I realized that the people who voted traditional feel very passionate about that. And the people who then said simplified, they would say, but you know what? If you want traditional, I'd totally be fine with it. And I would understand why you would. So we're going with traditional. That's probably the most respectful thing to do. And I think something that we can talk about later is any other addition to the artwork that goes a little deeper and can do more translations in other places, whether that's a plaque, whether it's a QR code that maybe takes somebody to talk more about the message, more about the translation, more about the history. The spike, this, I just thought that was a good visual of how there's the spikes and there's writing on it. Just provided that. This again is getting into the detailed level, but one of the comments that the panel made was, I wanna make sure that the spike is very contrasting in color with the circle. And this is the current color I'm thinking about, but I will probably pull together two or three different golds to send down for you all to look at and see them in different lights. And then you can choose amongst your favorite of them, but you'll see that there's definitely going to be contrast. The rust has that more matte kind of dry finish, earthy finish. And then the powder coat will have a glimmer and a shimmer. It will be very glossy. And you're not seeing it in here, but this particular one actually has some fleck in it, which would get some really fun reflective qualities to it. And it's sitting on top of the stainless steel, so that shows what the tracks will look like. So the additional proposal, this goes back to the whole say your names aspect. So Mei Wen, she asked, when she first saw the design, she had some very good feedback. Let me see if I can find where that is. Okay. So she asked the thought-provoking question in terms of races and in terms of this us versus them mentality. Why do we keep repeating ourselves? Just look at the say their names display right here in the park today. We have not learned from our past, and in many ways, not a lot has changed. So in her comments, she was saying, what will this artwork mean 5 years from now, 10, 50, 100? Will we still be perpetuating this same kind of discriminatory, cruel behavior to others? So she was wondering how this artwork could provoke the viewer's curiosity, ask hard questions, and think about their own contribution to the problem or to the solution. And sometimes it's both. Sometimes we are helping in some ways and other times we're harming in some ways. So the proposal is, imagine a stone sitting in the landscape there somewhere amongst this little island. And it's inscribed with Chinese calligraphy And this calligraphy is, well, imagine that the rock is of the earth. So it's sitting there jutting up from the earth, and it's almost as if the Chinese men who perished on our soil are sending a message. They're asking a question because they can't speak right now. They can't speak for themselves. They're not really seeing the honoring that we're doing. That's more for present day. But in Chinese calligraphy, they Confucius has basically a version of the golden rule. It's called the silver rule. And the way that Confucius likes to talk is in the double negative. Two negatives make a positive. So these eight Chinese characters there basically say, do not do unto others what you would not want them to do unto you. And it's almost as if these old souls are asking viewers to contemplate, simply ask yourself, would you want to be treated this way? I absolutely love this idea, and I feel like it broadens what this sculpture means, and it provides a connection between the other things that may end up in the park or wherever they end up around the city, but there's room for lots of art that speaks about social equity and the things that we're dealing with today. I see it having a English translation on the back. What I love about this is, you know, how kids or adults, you can go up and take pictures, and you can or take paper and etch it, or, you know, create the image on your piece of paper with a pencil. So I know that we didn't originally propose this, so maybe it's not able to be run through, you know, the current process, but I am so attached to this idea. I love it so much that if it doesn't go in now, then Mei Wen and Professor Yang and I will definitely be coming back to propose this as an addendum to the artwork. And the picture on the right is some of Professor Yang's calligraphy. And that was on display in there. And that's it.
Bravo.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
Questions, anybody? Bambi.
So I have a bunch of different questions, but sticking with the rock first, I wasn't clear, Jennifer, whether you're thinking that it would be closely located to the Golden Spike, Golden Connection, or someplace, yes, within that circle? What are your thoughts?
Oh, okay. So I definitely see it on the same planting area, that landscape area, but I could see it sitting off to the side somewhere. Off to the side, like not within the circle, not directly beside it, but somewhere in that planting area.
Okay, that definitely makes sense. So I haven't had a chance to talk to you since, you know, we put out the RFQ, and I just have to tell you that I had such confidence in your work just based on your response to our RFQ, and you have come through just amazingly. You know, we talked about a whimsical piece, a contemporary piece, something of exceptional quality, and your piece has measured up to each of those bars. I absolutely love it. Can I just make a couple of comments on the question about the Ashland lettering? On the spike, maybe consider doing that Ashland all in caps so that it's a little larger than the Portland and the San Francisco. And then you would not notice, you know, there'd be no connection to looking at that A and saying, that's like the city of Ashland A. So that would be something.
So you're saying instead of having all the letters in Ashland be the same height.
Yes.
Yes.
All caps, or, you know, yeah. Also, the Parks Commission the other night when they were in discussion, Jim, you're still here, talked about having 4 foot high shrubbery here. I mean, is that something that they're going to hold us to and that Jennifer needs to plan on? Jim?
Oh, yeah, I'd love to comment. In fact, that was on my list because I mentioned exceptions in the previous one. This is one you would, I would hope that you would put in your proposal that the landscaping not interfere with the artwork. We don't even have that policy yet, but one of the commissioners had brought it up because it might come in, but this is obviously a point of exception. And I think there's enough votes probably to pass that along that whatever landscaping won't obscure the art piece. And I think the hardscape and landscaping, I think the landscaping would help set it off if it's appropriate and low and as opposed to hardscape. So, and I know hardscape's easier to maintain. I understand that, but this is an exceptional piece. And I want to chime in and agree with Sandy is I had no idea what we were going to get with the three artists. And I must say your due diligence and your efforts to work out details, I think it was everything I could hope for in an artist who actually has a transformative piece. And so, hey, to you, Jennifer and Dave, thank you for this. And also getting the question I had was getting back to the modern and traditional Chinese characters. Maybe I misunderstood. Did the Chinese scholars chime in as to what would be appropriate? Seems like that's way more important than some panelists deciding on this. So maybe I misunderstood.
No, it wasn't the panelists. I was talking to all sorts of people really entrenched in the world of Chinese American history. And it's just, it was, I had to ask the question. I feel like there were people immediately came forward to say, you must use traditional, but I felt like for my own research, I had to understand why, because I was definitely getting half and half from people. And I oversimplified the debate. I think there's politics involved in it as well, and a lot of nuances, but you know, in the end, I think absolutely traditional, and every person that I've talked to in this world would, those 12 people would say, good. Yeah. That's a great choice. Several people in there have been involved in the Chinese Railroad Worker Project. This was a huge project. It was going on, I don't know when it started, maybe 2015. It was building up to 2019, which was the 150th anniversary of the completion of the railroad across the nation, east to west. And there was a big push to get as much research about the Chinese experience. You know, there wasn't a lot of written records. There weren't letters really sent back. And so I'm actually amazed with how much we have figured out of what happened, given the little evidence that's around. But the evidence, you know, yet a lot of people had to dig deep for it. And so this community, I didn't mention this, but everybody I talked to was just so generous in me, uneducated, asking stupid questions. Nobody made me feel stupid, and everybody seemed to think it was a very important project. And a number of people have said, I hope to come to the unveiling. These are people who have worked on the Chinese Railroad Project themselves. They were deeply involved with, there was a lot of artwork the artwork on Promontory Summit in Utah back in 2019. I had a 90-minute Zoom call with a gentleman from San Francisco, and he has ties to Ashland because he's the one, he was very involved in the Chinese American Chinese New Year's parade in San Francisco, and helping develop that and through the years make it bigger and quite an event there. And he basically brought up this dragon. It was the year of the dragon, and it's a 61-foot float, and he donated it to SOCA, and it was in quite disrepair. But I think one person led the effort at SOCA, and then, you know, a lot of the people helped, but it apparently looks better than it did originally now with what the people at SOCA did for this. And so now it's being used in Ashland's Chinese New Year parade. So I love that connection. This gentleman was in a documentary all about the Chinese Exclusion Act, which is definitely, I really think, one of our most racist pieces of legislation in history that none of us really learned about in high school, you know, in our high school history classes. But he's just been so open. He even reminded me at some point, because I was getting so wrapped up in getting the message right, he's like, remember you're an artist and remember to think about the artistic version. And he would tell me a lot about, you know, how much art is important in China. And he gave me lots of ideas on the characters and to use and different scripts to use. So it's been quite a learning experience.
Questions, anyone? Jennifer, I was just going to comment that when we were talking about the use of traditional versus contemporary, I thought it was really interesting what you said about the camps were basically 50-50, and, you know, it was kind of a situation where it's impossible to satisfy both halves at the same time. But what you said was, with the contemporary, more people would be able to read it, but with the traditional, the people that felt strongly about the traditional use of the characters felt very strongly about it. Where the people that were in the contemporary camp, they were a little less opinionated, if that's the right word.
They were less tied to it. And they were like, yeah, if you want to go traditional, you go traditional. I would be fine with that.
I
hope that we can have, you know, whether it's through a plaque, but ways to talk about maybe the deeper meaning and the translations of the piece through a plaque, through a website.
Let me just chime in for a minute about earlier on in the presentation, you showed, when you were talking about the fonts, you showed the medallion that is going in Railroad Park. And I bring this up for those in attendance that may not be familiar with the larger map project. On phase one, we've got 5 bronze medallions going in the sidewalks along A Street and one on 4th Street in front of Haskins Garage. The one that you showed is for Railroad Park, and it will go in the sidewalk close to the street at the entryway down to that sculpture. So part of the vision for the map project is to have it be very educational. And we will be linking these plaques to information on the city's website about where to find more information. And so it's just, there's a pretty high level of coordination between the different phases of this project that I think are really important to bring up for those in attendance that may not know. And Jennifer, I appreciate your sensitivity to this project so much.
I just wanted to thank you, Jennifer, for your due diligence. I'm blown away with how much you've done in the last 3 weeks and your willingness to talk to people and to get it right. Thank you so much.
Well, I do feel like, thank you for saying that. You know, this is a good example of when us Caucasians want to help the cause of another movement, you know, there's a lot of discomfort. There's a lot of awkwardness and the not knowing the right questions to ask, but that's all part of it. That's what I'm learning is like, we have to get more comfortable with being uncomfortable. And I think it's just been a good lesson for me to not take things personally, to learn from others. You know, I'm not going to be able to speak to this. I need people in the Chinese American community. I need their voices. We need their voices. And yeah, it's important to listen and it's important to help lift their voices. And, you know, where we can try to represent them, you know, but in the best way possible.
You know, I'd also like to, I don't think anybody has acknowledged Dave. Dave, thank you for your work on this project as well. We're showering praise on Jennifer, but obviously you're not chopped liver in this project.
No, I appreciate it. It's been a journey to watch and, you know, Jennifer's gone through a lot of work. It's been enjoyable to watch because after she gets off every one of these conversations, she comes back with a big smile. And boy, that was enlightening.
Yeah.
So I think it's been a growing for her. And once we get past a lot of this approvals, that's where you'll see my finger will become a big part of the process as we go to implementation. Yeah. Steve?
So we have an approval process to spin off of what was just said coming on Tuesday. And I noticed it's on the consent agenda. I'm tempted, and I'm kick this around a little bit, I'm tempted to pull that myself because if Jennifer could be in attendance along with you, Andy, I think if you had a short presentation ready to go, particularly with Jennifer's insight into this thing, I think it would go a long way to getting council approval. I suspect it's going to be pulled anyway by others, and I just wonder if I should preempt the high ground on that, pull it myself, and kick off a positive presentation piece prior to some potential headwind on this. What are your thoughts?
I had sort of expected that you might suggest that, Steve. How much time would be allocated for that if it was pulled from the consent agenda?
It's pretty fluid, but I would think I would think possibly a 10-minute, maybe even a 10-minute little presentation. And I could tee that up, possibly. I just wonder, in the past experience, Sandy, you might have some insight into that. You know, what you might think. Jim might want to weigh in on how to push it. I don't think the headwinds are going to be great, but it'd be so great to preempt the high ground on this. And because it's such a sparkling piece of art, and it so ties into what this idea of possibly a railroad park becoming a, to use Adam Hanks's favorite recent word, nexus of art relative to these big topics. I'd like to just see what folks think about that, if that's a good way to go.
I think so. Sandy.
Yeah, I would absolutely concur to start it off on the very positive note that a presentation by Jennifer and Andy would use to kick off the vote is absolutely the right thing to do. you know, can I add just one more thing? Jennifer, I've been on the commission for maybe 8 years and have experienced the two other larger pieces of public art in town. And I can tell you that the discussions and the work that you've done, the discussions that you've provoked have never risen on those to the level of your project. And your project cost perhaps a quarter of what the others did. So my compliments to you and thank you so much. And I'm, again, I'm not surprised because your original proposal was so complete that it's, you know, it's just worked its way to the positive end that it has engendered right now.
Thank you. I appreciate that.
As we wrap it up, is there any other comments? Aaron, you were first.
Yeah, just quick question. Jennifer, are you available on Jennifer and Dave, are you available on Tuesday evening?
Yes.
We can make it work.
Okay, terrific.
Thank you.
So yeah. Andy, would you and I be working on pulling that 10 minutes together or?
Yes, and we can talk about that for sure. Jim?
I noticed this is potentially your last day, Andy, as a public art commissioner.
It is my last meeting, but even more important than that, Jim, is this is Sandy's last meeting. And as she said, she's been with PAC for 8 years, and she has really, really done years and years of exceptional work. And I just really, we just need to recognize her years of devotion to the Public Art Commission. Thank you, Sandy. You will be greatly missed.
Both of you will be greatly missed, actually. And getting back to our consent agenda for our meeting, it was pulled. And like almost everything in Ashland, it seems like everything becomes political and people want to put their statements on it. And there was some talk of glorification of the railroad, which, you know, for me, it was taking it out of the context of history and putting it in the modern days of, you know, Charles Crocker maybe wasn't the best guy and, you know, and all that. But I think the way the project went was I didn't see it as glorifying it. I seen it as glorifying the impacts that came to Ashland. And that was my hope. We talked about worried about the railroad centric nature of it. And it might be a caboose or a locomotive or something. This is transformative. Jennifer and Dave came up with putting everything together in such an amazing way. And then there was talk of front and back. I like, we got to talk about symmetry and not a front or a back. I thought that was kind of a low blow. And I, you know, it's interesting how things you might consider so simple to go forward aren't that simple in this town. And so it needs a full discussion. And Stephen, good luck on your presentation or whatever it may be. But this is way too important to put a person's subjective ideas on a piece of art. So I feel, you know, people are going to want to do that. And there was a few shots taken at this project during our meeting. So hopefully it will get gaveled and we'll move on with the project after Tuesday.
Anybody else before we wrap it up? Steve?
I'll work with Adam and Melissa to make sure that Jennifer is and you are queued up properly and waiting in the vestibule so we have a seamless transition. And to spin off of what Jim said, it's amazing in this town how suddenly people who are in some kind of position of legislating or voting or something become instant experts all of a sudden. And we just have to kind of tolerate that and continue to move forward with this good work. So anyway, look forward to Tuesday. And I think it's going to be a positive outcome. And I'll do everything I can to not only tee up the presentation, but also to legally have some conversations with some folks to make sure that this receives a positive response. Thank you so much.
Thank you all. This meeting is adjourned. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Bye-bye. Thank you.
Thank you, everyone.